Thank you. May it please the Court. This matter comes before the Court today as a result of the new overdraft reporting rule that was instituted back in October of 2009 and formally went into effect in January of 2010. Shortly after the rule was put into place, Bank Midwest in Kansas City, Missouri, notified the Office of the Chief Disciplinary Counsel that respondents' trust account had been overdrawn on three separate occasions, as happens now following over 300 or more now in 2011, 400 such notifications. The office commenced an investigation of the respondent and his trust account through their investigation.
You had 300 or 400 notifications and people overdrawn on their trust accounts?
Your Honor, it's my understanding that the statistics in 2010 as far as the notices reached about 285 separate files that were opened. There may have been more notifications, but those had perhaps the same lawyer involved. And I think there have been at least over 110 or so as of this year. But in any event, once notification comes, Kelly Dillon in that office commences her investigation. She did so in this case. She asked the respondent to produce some bank records. He immediately, on receipt of the letter, contacted that office and commenced to convince her in a less than pleasant way that she was wrong, that he had not violated the rule, that the bank was wrong, actually expressing a fundamental misunderstanding.
He didn't convince her, he just tried to
persuade her. He had a fundamental misunderstanding of trust accounts and how they worked. He was convinced that he didn't need a trust account because he was not holding client funds for a long enough period to justify putting those funds into a trust account, even though some of those funds were personal injury settlements, for example, where he would get the client to endorse the check, he would place it into his trust account, and immediately write the client a check. And he felt like because they weren't holding those funds for long enough, he didn't need a trust account.
And I know he said he'd gotten early training that was inaccurate. Did you and did the panel believe his explanation, even though it was an inadequate explanation, or did they think it is there a suggestion here that it was intentional misconduct or that it was just an inexplicable lack of understanding of the rules?
The panel's decision, Your Honor, indicates that they believed it was as a result of ignorance on his part, that even though that's not an excuse to the rule violation, that they believed that he was operating under a gross misconception.
For whatever reason, he truly thought he was following the rules.
He fully thought that he fell within the exception to the trust account rule, which is outlined in the comment that says if you're only holding funds for a short period of time, those funds do not need to go into the trust account, which is of course not the case. And then, unfortunately, a common misconception that at least I'm seeing as in my job, I'm the special representative for Region 4, which is Kansas City. Alan has asked me to appear here before you today to argue this case because I'm very familiar with the respondent, having had some prior matters with him. And quite frankly, that's why we're here today, because it's a very close case. It's one of these cases where, on the one hand, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, well, okay, you're not alone in your misunderstanding of the rule. We're trying to do what we can. We've instituted the trust account over notification rule now. We have ethics school in place now. We have people going across the state trying to teach lawyers how to handle and operate their trust account because they're not getting it in law school. On the other hand, he has a history of disciplinary conduct.
Are you saying that law schools aren't teaching how to use trust accounts?
You know, they may be now, Judge, but when I was there, they certainly weren't. And I know that
they
there
did
are
when
so
I was there.
There are so many.
You went to Mizzou, right?
Spoken like a WashU graduate.
There unfortunately are so many, particularly solo and small firm lawyers operating in this state that just do not understand the significance of the trust account.
You're saying this is not a unique misperception?
It is not. Unfortunately, it is not, and I think Mr. Debcota testified at the disciplinary hearing panel that when he finally made it to the ethics school and finally went to the trust account school, and there were 80 other lawyers in the room that during breaks they would get together and talk about and scratch their head and ask each other if they really knew that that's how they were supposed to be operating their account. I've seen it before. I've seen it since.
But the registry for the bar requires you to check off certain things about your IALTA account. Could it not also say you understand you need to have an IALTA account, or you have to have a trust account, or is that the confusion for IALTA and trust accounts?
You know, I think the misconception is not whether I have the account, it's how it's appropriately used. In other words, there are lawyers, including the respondent in this case, that are using the account as an operating account under the misconception that if they don't hold client funds for long enough, then they can operate that way. And it's fundamentally wrong, because no matter how long you have these funds in your possession, those funds are at risk.
If they have clients' funds, they should have a trust account.
Yes.
So that could be put in the of course, they don't read it either, but I'm just saying, when you register for the bar every year, you have to check off whether you apply, the IALTA applies to you or not, or trust. So you could put something in there and say,
there's no question.
Understand you need that. If you have client funds, you must have a trust account.
I'm not sure that would solve the problem, because even in this case, Your Honor, even having been on probation, even having been asked to attend trust account CLEs during the course of that prior probation, even having a monitor to report to the Office of the Chief Disciplinary Counsel about whether he was operating his trust account correctly, he still failed.
So you don't think it's credible that he would say he doesn't understand how trust accounts should work given all the prior discipline and remedial actions taken?
I don't believe that he intentionally was trying to misappropriate any funds. I don't believe that he intentionally was trying to commingle. Well, he was intentionally commingling funds, but I don't think that he fully understood that he was putting client funds at risk. I think there are a number of lawyers out there that don't understand that concept.
Even after the training?
Even after the training.
But
and that doesn't speak
now.
Well for his ability to continue to practice law.
He's had the ethics school training does clearly teach this. Is that
it
correct?
Does. And more specifically, the trust account training, Your Honor, that the Missouri Bar puts on about four times a year, and they have webinars. It's a three-hour course. It specifically speaks to these issues.
Counsel, as far as mitigating evidence, no clients were injured by his actions. And, in fact, one of his former clients even testified to his favor.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's why we're here. That's what makes this such a difficult case.
Do we have any testing at the end of ethics or at the end of trust account training that they understand the that they've actually absorbed the training or have been somehow distracted doing other things? I mean, is there any testing at the end or to know whether or not they learned their lessons?
I've not attended the class, nor have I been asked
training?
To speak, and I really don't know whether there's a test at the end. Perhaps Mr. Russell.
Do you run the ethics training?
No, sir, I don't. Those are handled by Sarah Rittman and by Kelly Dillon, who is the investigator at the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, but I've not been asked to actually speak to the issue of trust accounts around the state. I speak to a lot of other issues, but not to that.
The recommendation was made, you have said, based on his past disciplinary history. And can you tell us why you think that disciplinary history warrants your recommended discipline?
Well, it's clearly a suspension case if you utilize the ABA standards on a clear, clearly looking at the ABA standards, in my opinion.
And you're saying suspension without a stay.
Well, that's the issue, whether or not the court should consider, based upon the Coleman case, that probation should apply in the case. In other words, that the suspension should be stayed and that he should be placed on probation with what other conditions the court.
I wasn't sure. How long do you think he should be on probation or how long the suspension?
Judge, 3 years is a long time. I have not seen a three-year probation before, but I think it would be appropriate in this case.
And he's already been on probation and had the probation stay. Is that correct?
He was on an interim suspension alcohol and substance abuse issues, Your Honor. He then was reinstated and placed on probation for a little over a year. It was a one-year period, but those don't usually end right at the year. They have to reapply to be reinstated. And I think it was more like perhaps as much as 18 months that he actually was on a probation.
But this is not related to that. This is an unrelated problem.
Now, these problems occurred following that period of time, although I think he was reinstated in January of 2008, and these notifications started occurring in January of 2010.
Tim, but also during the period of time that he was on the interim suspension, he had additional problems, is that correct, in Kansas?
I believe that that problem arose prior to the time he was placed on probation in Missouri, Your Honor. Okay. And it had to do with, I think, some type of a rule 1.1. Yes, he had signed his client's name to an interrogatory answer, having been previously given the client's authority to do so, and rather than sign the name by him, he signed the name and notarized it. As I was about to state to you, I think the real issue here is whether or not the court should grant probation in the case, and it's really a close call. Our office, Allen's office, does a wonderful job of trying to analyze each one of these cases to make the appropriate recommendation to you in each individual case. It was not a case where we decided to stipulate to the facts and stipulate to a recommendation. It was our thought that we would present this case to a disciplinary hearing panel, two lawyers and one layperson that worked very hard on your behalf to hear evidence in cases such as these. They listened to this case for a full day. They weighed on the credibility of all the witnesses. They heard my argument about suspension being the appropriate recommendation in this case. They listened to Mr. Russell talk about why that suspension should be stayed and be put on probation. Their decision was to recommend to you that the respondent be suspended for 3 years and that he be placed on probation for a period of 3 years with several conditions. Mr. Pratzel decided, as is his ability to do, that was the appropriate disposition in this case. We had wanted to hear from three neutral people, and so we're here today to offer that to you. I'm sure that, it really, quite frankly, it is a close case. If you look down historically, there are cases, when I first started in this practice, where this type of conduct would get you disbarred, unequivocally disbarred. It's really a close call, and we felt this was just the appropriate process.
You thought here education and supervision would get him back on the right track, and the public would not be at risk.
Protect the public, maintain the integrity of the profession is utmost, Judge. We're not here to punish anyone. This rule works. The probation rule works. We're here to educate, and certainly this process is one that's going to, if nothing else, educate the respondent in this case.
Excuse me, before you sit down.
Yes.
Did I misunderstand you earlier in your argument when you said that after the classes, the respondent did not seem to understand how to run a trust account?
Yes, Your Honor, which has made this, is in my mind, one of the aggravating factors that
well,
we need
I,
to consider.
You are saying that he does not seem at the present to understand how to run a trust account.
I believe that now he understands it. He testified during the disciplinary hearing that he had attended the course put on by Kelly Dillon and Sarah Rittman, and a light bulb came on, and he now understood the errors of his ways, and he now has changed the way he is handling his trust account.
But did this occur after that training?
Yeah, no. during the course of the training, and then he changed it.
Well, he had some earlier training after his prior probation that it was on trust accounts and other things, but apparently not focused specifically on this, and he didn't get it. Now he's had the ethics training, and he gets it.
He apparently gets it. Thank you.
May it please the court. It was a little ominous start this morning, Judge Teitelman, when I saw you take that near tumble back there. It reminded me of my first case I ever argued was at the Eighth Circuit in a federal habeas case, and I was halfway through my argument, and Judge Van Oosterhout moved his chair slightly, and it went over completely, and I told him I thought it was the force of my argument, certainly, that carried so much weight, and it resulted in a unanimous affirmance of my client's problem, so I hope we don't have that same situation. The disciplinary hearing panel in this case finds...
It's my first day on the job.
The disciplinary hearing panel finds, and appropriately, that Mr. Defcoda commingled funds. Clearly he did. We've never denied it. It's not been an issue. He used client funds to pay some of his own things. Basically, as Mr. Gottschall has indicated, using his trust account as well as his operating account as operating
account. But even without training, doesn't that put a red light on somewhere?
Should. And didn't particularly, for him, and he's the first to advise you that, and if you read his testimony, that he can't understand it. He thinks he's a dummy, and he's not, but that's...
Was this
that's,
when he was on alcohol and substance abuse?
Well, you need to... Let me touch that briefly. He had a previous probation and suspension that resulted from his alcohol abuse. And he was on a interim suspension for 2 years. Then when he came off of interim suspension, he went on a one-year probation that primarily addressed his alcohol usage and had as an adjunct to that some of his trust account, because his trust account was in disarray at the time that he was on that probation. I would advise you that the probation and the treatment that he received for his alcohol problem has been very successful, and through the course of this whole proceeding, which has been pretty tough on him, he has not slipped back into any kind of alcohol problem. So I would tell you, in my experience,
we applauded for that, but our goal is not punishment, as it mentioned earlier, at least my goal is it, it's protecting the public.
That's correct.
And how do we know that he's finally learned, there's no tests or any
let,
kind of...
Let me tell you how it works, because he's done something that is really kind of unique with his trust account. You all don't see it very often, but now you know if you're in the business, Judge Francis will remember it from his time in the practice, that you get Medicare liens and other things that tie up your funds for long period of times in your trust account. You have to deal with those. What Tarek has done now is when he gets a settlement in, particularly in a BI case, is they calculate what the client's share is, figure the expenses. He goes and buys a cashier's check for the client's part so that he holds it with a cashier's check rather than delivering it. He pays his own expenses. He zeroes his trust account every month. It zeroes out. So there are never any funds that are being carried over. So he has appropriately dealt with that so he doesn't ever have a problem with it. And for those things that you receive in a practice like his, which involves traffic, some other small matters, fines, deposits and those things, he has the client bring him a certified fund thing so he doesn't have to put it in a trust account and be responsible for it.
If he has a traffic case where he has filing fees, that doesn't go into his trust account?
He gets a certified money order made payable to the court from the client, so he doesn't have to do that. So he's taken steps in his trust account to really take care that he doesn't have a problem. I think it's significant in this case. You know, the hearing panel finds he has the commingling, the use of the funds, and the argument, whatever you want to call it, that he had with Kelly Dillon, are the three basic things on which they impose discipline. They say, under these circumstances, given the Coleman case, we're going to give him 3 years.
Is his trust account now audited by the, not just by the bank telling him there's an overdraft, is it audited by the OCDC?
No, but it's subject to be. If he's on probation, they can do that. They can make that a condition that he do that on a regular basis, furnish it. But, I mean, what he's doing now really is very workable. But they relied on the Coleman case. And in the Coleman case, you're looking at a guy who, he's got almost 30 years of practice. Tarek had about 9 at the time, with 2 of them out for suspension. And the panel says 3 years and 3 years probation. Coleman was 1 year and 1 year probation. Both cases, no client harm. Both cases, commingling. Both cases, the use of client funds to pay your expenses, the use of your trust account.
The concern is not so much... It is good that there's no client harm, but the concern is there might be client harm.
That's correct.
Because there's so much trust given to the lawyer over these funds.
No argument about it, Judge. But in Coleman, you all said that's appropriate, 1 year probation.
That's 30 years of practice. This is 9 years of practice, of which two or three years have been suspensions or probation.
That's correct. That's in his favor. He's not a practitioner who's been around 30 years and knows how.
But then he has a short period of time to have so much suspension.
Yeah. Well, he had a suspension.
Or a probation.
Okay. At any rate, the situation is the hearing panel considered this. Under Donahoe, you all say, rightfully so, we should give considerable weight to what the hearing panel says. Not only do we have that, in this case, the Chief Disciplinary Counsel and myself, pursuant to the rule, say we accept the decision of the hearing panel. And we don't do that lightly, because when we accept it, I'm not in a position to come to you and argue the suspension should be for a lesser time. The suspension should have different conditions. The suspension and the probation should be for a shorter time. The Disciplinary Counsel's office is not in the position to come to say to you, it should be greater. We have agreed. We've both given something up. And we don't do that lightly.
And so does your client, Mr. Russell, agree to all the conditions of probation, including hiring a trust account manager and hiring another attorney to oversee and supervise his law practice?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We proposed it, as a matter of fact, after looking at Coleman and looking at Ehlers. We thought it was appropriate that he could do that, and we've got a mentor for him, John Kurtz, a very fine lawyer in Kansas City, who will assist him. He can be monitored. I do some of the monitoring work myself occasionally on behalf of the OCDC, and you meet with these people, and you go over with them what they're doing, see whether they're progressing properly. He'll have that. But he's doing very well right now with the situation.
By the way, it does speak to the your client that he has you as your as counsel, because the often the reputation of the counsel and vouching for the person makes a difference.
I appreciate that, Judge. Thank you very much. I didn't know him before we started. We've come to have a good relationship through the course of this. But one of the things I wanted to say to you is that just as you all say considerable weight should be given to what the hearing panel says, I think you ought to give some weight to the fact that the Chief Disciplinary Counsel and I are both willing to say we'll accept this, because we both give something up when we do that. And I think that ought to have some weight. The Coleman case was so much more egregious than this case. This is the Coleman case, as you may recall, was a fellow who takes a fee agreement. His client says, I'll make the decision about whether or not the case settles. I have the sole right to do that. Settle the case. Client says no.
The Coleman case, however, he did not expend any funds in the trust account. So that
No, he certainly did. And the finding is in the Coleman case that he used it for personal. That was his contention,
right,
that he did
there was
not.
Never any deficit. There was never any indication that the funds that he expended were anything other than his part of the funds. He wrote checks out of
account. I understand that.
He didn't write checks on a client's money.
I understand that, but he was writing checks out of the trust account for his own stuff at a time when there were client funds in there, and it's exactly the same thing that Judge Teitelman talks about. It's the risk that you'll do something in that situation.
Right, but there was never any overdraft. There was never
expenditure. As far as I know, there was not. But the opinion clearly says that. But he's got all of these other things that are not just trust account stuff. He files a motion to enforce a settlement that his client says she won't sign. It's pretty egregious conduct by a guy who's been around a long time. We think in this situation, I could go through all of the similarities and the differences, but that this is exactly what ought to happen. You ought to follow the decision of the disciplinary hearing panel and the agreement that we have. I think you will find that probation works. The statistics that Mr. Pratzel's office puts out in his regular report show you that it's a viable tool in the disciplinary process.
Well, in this case, he was on probation, and now we're going to put him on probation.
He was on probation, Judge, for
different things.
Competence and for diligence. which are what you usually see with somebody that's boozing, that they neglect their business, they don't communicate well with their client and those things. That was what he was on for. And that was addressed and addressed very, very well. As an aside, he was supposed to get some training in the trust account field. He got it, but it didn't take. I will tell you that now it has taken, and he goes beyond what most people do. I would also tell you, that as Mr. Gottschall indicated, my experience is like his, that there are a number of lawyers who misunderstand what the comment means attached to 115. And some pretty good ones, and I've represented a couple of them. You say, it doesn't mean that, but they think it does. And so if I were going to suggest anything that you ask about...
Well, see, that was before the mandatory IOLTA. Before mandatory IOLTA, there was discretion of whether or not you had to take... You had to have a trust account, but IOLTA didn't necessarily take until a certain period, whether or not there was some money being generated. But the mandatory IOLTA, everyone's got an IOLTA account. Everyone's got to trust it.
And it's been that way for how long? It's been quite a while. But there is that misunderstanding with the commentary.
You're suggesting we could make the comment clearer.
I think so. I think it would really help if that were addressed, because it's a common failing that I'm amazed. I would say I've been doing discipline work not by choice, but simply by chance over the years. How many lawyers that I run into that don't have trust accounts staggers me. They say, I don't need one. Where in the world did you ever get the idea that you don't need one? 115. I don't keep it long enough. The money comes in, I sign the checks, and it goes out, and I don't need a trust account. And it's crazy, but it is a fact. But I suggest to you that Tarek is a good candidate for probation. The length of probation is fine with him, even though it's a long period. The length of suspension is fine with him. He understands his case. We have always said this is a suspension case. The only real issue has been whether it's a probation case or not a probation case. And he's one of the questions you have, is he an able lawyer, able to protect him, do his work? I just picked up the jury verdict service a couple of weeks ago in Kansas City, and he tried it. A personal injury case to a good conclusion, so he's doing work that's capable, and if you read the transcript, he has a very good relationship with his clients. They think a lot of him, and at this point, it would be a major hardship on him and his family if he ends up not on probation. We think the public is adequately protected with this plan of probation. It's more stringent than most any I've ever seen, and I think it's very, very workable, and we would ask the court to follow the recommendation of the disciplinary hearing panel and follow the agreement that, or the acceptance of the disciplinary hearing panel decision that the OCDC and respondent have entered into. Thank you.
Now, you're confident that with the monitor and the new, we'll go to the left. With the monitor and the office manager thing, that the public is protected.
I am, Your Honor. I think the office does a remarkable job of handling the probations, monitoring the probations, reaching out to the intervention committee when necessary. Perhaps reaching out more to the regional disciplinary committees would be an appropriate step to have them do some monitoring. We do that as a part of our informal probable cause hearings on a monthly basis anyway. These volunteers, they work very hard, and I know that the people in Jefferson City, and I'm just a part-time employee, I'm just there doing what I can in Kansas City to try to help out. But I know they work very hard.
What do our rules allow for duration in probation? Do the rules provide any parameters for the length of the terms of probation?
Well, I believe that the rule says 3 years is the maximum, and six year perhaps is the minimum, yes. But it does also provide the office with some tools to utilize to do the monitoring that was suggested by the judge.
Was it your thought process that the length of the, he was talking about the Coleman case, was it was your thought process that the length of the probation was made as long as it was because of the prior probationary term and unsuccessfulness of that?
I'm convinced that that was part of the motivation because the aggravating circumstances in this case were so serious. The prior discipline history, the Ehler case, for example, that I argued very strongly to that panel, the idea of progressive discipline, the idea of we can't keep reprimanding and suspending and trying to educate lawyers. At some point, you have to say that's it. So I do believe that the prior discipline was a strong aggravating factor that led them to the length of that probation.
The respondent made some false statements to your investigator and was rude. Are you all satisfied with his remorsefulness and his apologies?
I've seen the letter, Your Honor. I understand the motivation behind it, having heard him testify that he had thought he had done everything he was supposed to do, that out of the blue he receives a letter telling him that his trust account is not being handled properly, that he, under the misconception based upon the comment to the rule, that he didn't have to maintain a client trust account, that that's the reason that he made the statements to Ms. Dillon. The tone of it, I don't quite understand.
Can you recommend to your superiors who may be in the room now that they maybe a test, a certification, every training, whether it's a trust account training or ethics training, indicate that they understand each of the, that they cannot commingle, they cannot overdraft, they cannot borrow money from their client trust, that they need to have a client trust, that they be given that kind of a test or certification at the end of the training. So
I will inquire and be sure that Mr. Pratzel heard your comments today, Judge, and I'm sure that he will take them into consideration. They do a fine job there, and I think that if anything, we should just let the system work, let the probation rule work, and we will do our job to try to help educate and protect the public. Thank you very much.
The court